I'm reading from The Demonologist, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren by Gerald Brittle. I'll get to Amityville. Lonnie, we were talking about. You remember? Remember Lonnie? Last night, we were reading. Ed and Lorraine were lecturing. Lorraine is the clairvoyant. Ed is the demonologist. Somebody said tonight on a message, how did Ed Lorne become a demonologist? Practice and much exposure. In the Catholic Church, the ritual of exorcism has been around a long, long time. And they just have encountered it a lot, had a lot of experience. Lorraine was the girlfriend of a boy named Alan, or rather, Lonnie, isn't it? Yeah, Lonnie was the girlfriend of a boy named Alan. He brought her to the lecture. Lorraine, the clairvoyant, sensed the resistance of her spirit. After the lecture, as she was introduced to Lonnie, she went into demon possession. Attempted to kill her. Lonnie attempted to kill Lorraine. Needless to say, it shook up the whole audience. They then went home that night with Lonnie and Alan, who, in Lonnie's case, when she came out from under the possession, didn't remember a thing that had happened. They're at their house. The next morning, Ed's talking. I put in a call to a local Protestant exorcist in whom I had great faith. My only reason for reading all of these is to show how much neglected evidence exists in the modern world. Now, if you're watching for the first time, we've covered everything from the Bermuda Triangle to a Pentecostal exorcism of the girl bitten by demons in the Bilibad prison in Manila to shamanism. We just touched on that. I spent more time with the extraordinary experiences of Ed and Lorraine Warren. The stories are incredible. Totally unbelievable. In fact, I've taken applications for a Ghostbuster to check some of the stories out. And there is a current happening going on, being reported in the press, that some people who listen to me are checking out right now. But Ed and Lorraine Warren, being Catholic, give me a starting point on this, a little different than the usual approach taken on the subject of demonology. My big quarrel with Protestant charismatics has been the tendency to treat the devil and his cohorts ridiculously. Last night we read some tape recording of voices at the Enfield House in England. Those demons were not that retarded. That was the game they were playing. Satan, in much of his activity, doesn't want to be recognized. He would much rather have people laugh at this and not believe that it happens until he has the situation set up to his liking. They're not at all retarded. Take my word for it. And they're no mean opponents. Now, the next morning, Ed says, I put a call through to a local Protestant exorcist in whom I had great faith. I couldn't call on a Catholic exorcist at the time because their clergy has to follow Vatican policy and undergo a 3-day period of fasting and prayer before conducting any exorcism of the possessed. They can bless a house, but an exorcism goes by their rules. And ever since the movie The Exorcist, give me a little more microphone, just a little. Ever since the movie The Exorcist, they've been highly sensitive that their procedures be followed all the way. That's perfectly right there. I was having such trouble getting close to my eyes. I thought maybe that, that's better. That's better. So he called a Protestant who didn't have to go through all those preliminaries. The exorcist and his assistant, both Protestant clergymen, arrived about an hour later to do a quick exorcism on Lonnie, because they had discerned that with the recognition of possession, she was in great danger of her own life. What I had to do, Ed said, was prove to these Protestants that a possession was in fact taking place. One of the many tests for possession is to discreetly place a crucifix behind the head of the possessed. I want to tell you something. It ain't going to do that much unless you happen to be an exorcist who places enough faith in the crucifix and are sincerely committed in that pattern of ritual and liturgy that Satan can somehow interfere with your very root faith premise by his actions. And that's the case in Ed and Lorraine. In this case, the exorcist instructed the girl to close her eyes, which Lonnie did, and slowly count to 20. His assistant, already standing behind the girl, then placed a cross 6 inches behind her head. The entity possessing the girl suddenly let. Now, that's exactly where I was last night. Just to let you know, the teacher ain't stupid. I know where I quit reading, I marked it. The entity possessing the girl suddenly let. Now, the question is always the same. Now, what I want to know is, why would they make a pipe with the elephant's head upside down? Why didn't they just put a hole on top of his head, curve him the right way, or put one of those little chairs that Tarzan's monkey would sit in? I mean, I almost feel sorry for this elephant while I smoke it. You know, he's not only getting his innards burned, he's tanned on his head. Suddenly. Suddenly. The entity possessing the girl suddenly let go with a wild, violent screaming. Take it away, it burns, take it away. Using the cross provoked the possessing entity to reveal itself, at which time we were able to intellectually confront the entity that had taken over the girl. The spirit, the same one that had possessed her the night before, admitted it was alone in the seizure of the girl's body. When the exorcist told it to identify itself, it responded by declaring, "I am a servant of Diane." We got very little else out of the spirit. For the most part, it went off on binges of screaming, cursing, and howling. Ordinarily, before an exorcism is allowed to take place, a formal investigation is conducted to prove possession has occurred in an individual. At the time, though, it was incontrovertible that the girl was possessed. Therefore, the exorcist decided it would be best to perform the deliverance ritual right then and there. In this case, the exorcist had the upper hand right from the beginning, because the thing was so fearful of any mention of God, or being in the presence of a cross or holy water. Still, the possessing entity was quite resistant during the reading of the ritual, which took about 1 hour to perform. During the ritual, it kept screaming, "She's mine! She's mine! Her soul is mine!" In time, the spirit was exorcised from the girl that day. But just before it departed, the thing vowed it would return to another. None of us present had any idea what the spirit had in mind. Later, I would be the one to find out. After the exorcism was over, and Lonnie was freed from bondage to this spirit, Ed continues, the girl turned the black lace veil, the goat horns, the cup, and the conjuring book over to me, which we read last night she had had and used, lest she be tempted or oppressed to use them again. Lorraine then picked me up at the girl's apartment, and later that day, as is my custom, I brought these articles home with me for safekeeping. I wonder if they have a waiting list of visitors to their home. Right from the very beginning, the witchcraft paraphernalia caused me trouble, recalls Ed. The presence followed me everywhere. Then the following night, after sunset, a psychic cold filled the office where I'd put the objects. Sensing the change in temperature, I got up from my desk and looked out into the room, which was the museum they keep of such items they had taken from people that participated in an exorcism for. There, by the veil and horns, I saw a dark, there, the witchcraft paraphernalia caused me trouble, recalls Ed. The presence followed me everywhere. Then the following night, after sunset, a psychic cold filled the office and museum where I'd put the objects. Sensing the change in temperature, I got up from my desk and looked out into the museum. There, by the veil and horns, I saw the dark. There, by the veil and horns, I saw the dark. There. Now, again, these are unbelievable stories. How can they all be a lie? There's just too much here to ignore. Now, why was I teaching on a Bermuda Triangle? Too many strange happenings to ignore. The passages in the pyramid, too many dates right on to ignore. Why am I reading these ghost stories? gutter man told him to get rid of the ghosties last night. Too many happenings strange like this to ignore. The presence followed me everywhere. Then the following night, after sunset, the psychic cold filled the office and the museum where I'd put the objects. Sensing the change in temperature, I got up from my desk and looked out into the museum. There, by the veil and horns, I saw a dark, gray, cloud-like mass about the size of a man building into a dense, black form. This is scary. Let's leave that there for a minute. Leave that there for a minute and go to Amityville. The Amityville thing is scary. I think that most people, satiated on Halloween, stupid Hollywood horror stories, didn't really believe that the Amityville horror was based on fact. Here's the intro. I read it before, but let's read it again. Can I leave Ed there with that mask? He's confronted him before. He'll wait. I stared into the mirror in sheer belief, disbelief. That's not me. That can't be me, I screamed. I, Kathleen Lutz, am a young, blonde-haired housewife with pale, soft skin. That's not what I saw in my reflection. I had turned into a disgusting-looking 90-year-old hag. My hair was white and scraggly. Ugly creases and crow's feet scarred my face. I drooled all over my shriveled-up, dry skin. It was the work of horrible, evil spirits that had plunged my family and me into chilling terror for 28 days. It turned our dream house into a hell house. It was while they were investigating this that they had another mass experience, remember? And here I am leaving people. No matter what happens, something interferes every night. Shall I continue? Yes, sir. They bought the house where one of the most terrible murders had occurred. They called the priest in to bless it, and he had trouble from the beginning. And then, for the seventh night in a row, George awoke at exactly 3:15. He sat up in bed, in the winter moonlight flooding the bedroom. George saw Kathy quite clearly. This ain't no soap opera. They're married. The drama is the demonology in this, not the other stuff. She was sleeping on her stomach. He reached out his hand to touch her head, and at that instant, Kathy woke up. As she looked wildly about, George could see fright in her eyes. "She was shot in the head," Kathy yelled. "She was shot in the head. I heard the explosions. In my head." Detective Gianfrido would have understood what had frightened and awakened Kathy. I'm reading from The Amityville Horror, much better than the movie. A true story by Jay Anson. On February 5th, 1976, the 10 o'clock news on New York's Channel 5 announced it was doing a series on people who claimed to have extrasensory powers. The program cut to reporter Steve Bauman investigating an allegedly haunted house in Amityville, Long Island. Bauman said that on November 13, 1974, the large colonial house at 112 Ocean Avenue had been the scene of a mass murder. 24-year-old Ronald DeFeo had taken a high-powered rifle and methodically shot to death his parents, two brothers, and two sisters. DeFeo had subsequently been sentenced to life imprisonment. 2 months ago, the report continued, the house was sold for $80,000 to a couple named George and Kathleen Lutz. The Lutzes had been aware of the killings, but not being superstitious, they had felt the house would be perfect for themselves and their three children. They moved in on December 23rd. Shortly thereafter, Bauman said they'd become aware that the place was inhabited by some psychic force and that they feared for their lives. They talked of feeling the presence of some energy inside, some unnatural evil that grew stronger each day they remained. 4 weeks after they moved in, the Lutzes abandoned the house. Smart. Those we read about last night for economic reasons stayed around. The Lutzes abandoned the house, taking only a few changes of clothes. At present, they were staying with friends in an undisclosed location. But before they left, Channel 5 stated their predicament had become known in the area. They had consulted the police and a local priest, as well as a psychic research group. They reportedly told of strange voices seeming to come from within themselves, of a power which actually lifted Miss Lutz off her feet toward a closet behind which was a room not noted on any blueprints. Now, you will remember, when that mass materialized and attacked in the book The Demonologist that we're trying to get for you, in the cottage where Ed Warren, the demonologist, was staying, and then attacked his wife in the house, he was writing his report as one of the experts called in the Amityville Horror case. This is the book about it. When they moved in, thinking they had the bargain of the century, some strange things begin to happen. A priest was called in to bless the house. Strange things happened to him. He fell sick with the flu. Tried to reach him to tell him not to go in a certain room. The phone disconnected. Couldn't make connection. And we're now at the 25th of December in the book that I started with a few minutes ago. Nice December 25th Christmas story. She was shot in the head, Kathy yelled. She was shot in the head. I heard the explosions in my head. Detective Gianfrido would have understood what had frightened and awakened Kathy. Filing his report, he said, well, why don't you lay a pipe down so you can have two hands? I need comfort. After the initial investigation, filing his report the night of the DeFeo murders, Gianfrido, the detective, had written that Louise, the mother of the family, had been shot in the head while sleeping on her stomach. Everyone else, including her husband, who was lying right beside her, had been shot in the back while lying in the same position. This information had been included in the material turned over to the Suffolk County prosecution team, but never released to the news media. There was absolutely no way Kathy, having this experience, awakened that night, could know this fact. In fact, this detail had never come out, even at Ronnie DeFeo's trial. Now, Kathy Lutz also knew, without having seen the report, she also knew now how Louise DeFeo had died that night. She was in the very same bedroom. George held his shaken wife in his arms until she had calmed down and fallen back to sleep. Then once again, the urge to check out the boathouse came over him. He'd gone out several times, locked it, and the door would manage to go open and bang. Their dog was going crazy. George quietly slipped from the room. He was almost upon Harry, that's the dog, in his compound when the dog awoke, springing to his feet. Shh. Harry, he said, it's all right. Take it easy, boy. The dog settled back on his haunches. Now, I wasn't reading when I said the dog is going crazy. I was reviewing that in past times, the dog's gone crazy. This time, dog's sleeping. Like that dog that was asleep at the foot of the bed with his hair raising up and not doing anything. The dog settled back on his haunches and watched George test the boathouse door. It was closed and locked, so once more he reached down and reassured Harry, that's all right, boy, go back to sleep. George turned and started back toward the house. George circled around the swimming pool fence. The orb of the full moon was like a huge flashlight lighting his way.
This is the end of side one. For more of the teaching, please turn the tape over for side two. Thank you.